Has the wave of Arab revolutions finally reached Saudi Arabia's shores? The arrest of a prominent Shia cleric has apparently taken street protests to a whole new level. Where is all the anger stemming from, and what lies ahead for the Saudi kingdom? This is News Analysis.
Death to Al Saud. That's what these young protesters are shouting in Saudi Arabia's eastern province, the cradle of a popular uprising against the centuries-long rule of the ruling dynasty. The more than a year-long protest gathered steam after security forces arrested a Shia cleric last week. Nimr al-Nimr, an outspoken critic of the Saudi regime, was injured during his arrest by security forces. Riyadh has harshly cracked down on the anti-regime protesters since the wave of regional popular uprisings reached the kingdom. Large numbers of dissidents are held in jail under dire conditions. A riot in Al Hayer prison has left two people dead. Saudi Arabia has been criticized frequently by rights groups for showing no tolerance for dissent. But lack of political freedom is only one aspect of the Saudi citizens' plight. A majority of them face social restrictions imposed by the law and religious police, while those close to the ruling dynasty have special privileges. Women are not allowed to drive under the law. Mismanagement and poverty are also rampant in the kingdom. Activists say over 60% of Saudi citizens are living under the poverty line in the world's largest oil exporter and producer. This is while Riyadh ranks seventh in the world when it comes to allocating its annual budget to arms purchases. Saudi Arabia is also grappling with what many analysts call political instability due to a power struggle within the ruling dynasty. This, they say, stems from the fact that most of the Saudi leaders are in their 70s and 80s. The Saudi regime's image has also been tarnished by its military intervention in Bahrain and Yemen and its interference in Syria. All these have caused the deterioration of Saudi Arabia's standing, and many observers believe big changes are in the offing in the kingdom.
Well, joining me now live from Washington is Mr. Ali Al-Ahmad. He's the IGA's director. With us live from Beirut, Carmel Wazni, political analyst, and in Chicago, Stephen Lenman, writer and radio host. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for joining us. My first question to our guest in Washington, Mr. Ahmad, the arrest of Sheikh Nimr al-Nimr, that, of course, has led to an escalation of protests now. Did the regime make the wrong decision in detaining him?
Absolutely. The regime made that decision thinking that that will calm down the street, it will prevent further protests, but it did just the opposite. It inflamed passions and pushed the young people into the street even with larger numbers. And we have seen young students being killed by Saudi special forces. So we are witnessing the birth of a revolution in Arabia.
Right, and just to stay focused again on Sheikh al-Nimr's role and position in this, I'd just like to go to Beirut here, Mr. Wazni. Some parts of the media in Saudi Arabia, some sources even outside of Saudi Arabia in the Western media have referred to Sheikh al-Nimr al-Nimr as the person who's looking for a Shiite state, in their words, in Saudi Arabia. What do you know about his role in the Saudi protests and the significance of this arrest for the future of this movement that started in Saudi Arabia?
Well, obviously, Sheikh al-Nimr al-Nimr, he's first of all, he's a resident of Saudi Arabia. He's a citizen of Saudi Arabia. He never claimed that he wanted to build a Shiite state within Saudi Arabia. What he stated that he doesn't like the system of Saudi Arabia. He doesn't like the way they conduct, the monarchy conduct its business in Saudi Arabia, and he doesn't like the fact that the monarchy been there for a very long time and there is no constitution for the country and there is no actually elected power within that country. The fact that the people don't have that voice where they have to go to the ballot every period of time and select their leadership, and he doesn't like the fact there is a lot of white discrimination against Shia and other Saudis in all part of Saudi Arabia. But he concentrated his movement about what is taking part in eastern part of Saudi Arabia, because mostly the people in the eastern part, mostly the Shiite, were discriminated, marginalized by the Saudi government. The people of the eastern part were not allowed to be promoted or to hold middle or higher jobs. To that fact, I was told that even a high school principal are not allowed to have from that part of that region. You're not allowed to be like an officer in the army or the policeman, or you can enter as a soldier. So, and they actually kept that zone very impoverished for a purpose. They're not allowed to participate in their religious ceremonies or to build their mosque. So there's all kind of violation of, and I think Sheikh Nimr al-Nimr, he tried to address that inequality that exists within the Saudi government, within the monarchy, and he called outright for the downfall of the monarchy, and he called for the downfall of Al Saud. He was
Mr. Wallace, I just stop you there to again come to the point of what was raised there by a guest in Washington, whether this is the beginning of a national revolutionary movement of the type that we've seen in the Arab world. I'd just like to put that question to our guest in Chicago, Stephen Lenman. Do you agree that this is the Saudi protest reaching a whole new level? Now, of course, at the same time, we're hearing that it's not just Shias who have been persecuted in Saudi Arabia. We're hearing of thousands of, for instance, Saudi political prisoners in Saudi Arabia. They have their demands. We're hearing of protests now spreading to the capital, Riyadh, in the holy city of Medina, for instance. So do you think that it's not now merely restricted to the Shia minority in one specific region?
Yeah, I think that is absolutely true. Whether this reflects the national revolution, only hindsight will tell. But I can remember years ago, I read a book by an author who I respected greatly, and he predicted that the Saudi regime will fall. He couldn't say when. He basically said a regime this repressive, that has such disdain for its own people, that has immense wealth, and it uses it for repression, for militarism, for enriching themselves and their cronies, and a small elite group in the country, and letting most others in the country live in deep poverty, denying them any kind of rights whatsoever. No regime like that can stand. I believed what he said then. I believe it now. Nobody can tell when it will happen. Whether this will be a trigger, who can know? But it's very interesting. What's going on now in Saudi Arabia is spreading. People only tolerate intolerance so long. Eventually they rebel, and when it gets started, it's like a fire in a wind. It spreads, and I truly believe that the Saudi regime is doomed. It could happen anytime. It could happen years from now. But I think one day this repressive regime will go. But I must say this, the regime in America will pull every stunt they can to keep this machine viable. They'll extend its life, but in the end, they'll lose.
Right. And on that point, that is a question that I'm going to raise, how Saudi Arabia's Western allies are going to react to this situation. But before we come to that, Mr. Ahmed, right now, let's look at how the Saudi government has been speaking about this, the Saudi regime, about what's happening in the streets. They've been saying in their reports, I'm quoting, that there are masked gunmen involved. They're attacking security personnel. They're attacking police stations. And they say that, in quotes, there's a number of elements involved in what's happening in the streets in Saudi Arabia, and they're trying to provoke violence. What do you think is, in the long run, the game plan of the Saudi establishment in the face of these protests?
Well, the game plan of the Saudi protests, and they use the Saudi government using against the protest movement, is the same tactics that used by Hosni Mubarak, Gaddafi, and others who have already have fallen. So it's very typical for them to accuse it of violence, of external or foreign influence, and of the protesters carrying guns and so on. If you take example of the last young person, 17-year-old Abdullah Jami, who was shot while walking in the street of Awamiya, he was shot by a sniper, by a special forces sniper, about half a kilometer away from the police station. He was captured, he was brought to the station bleeding, and they actually beat him up and let him die as a high school student. And they claimed that he was attacking the police station. So this type of stories and lies that the Saudi government is spreading will not stand for scrutiny, international and local scrutiny. And it's a typical excuse that they use against protesters. There are tens of thousands of protesters, as we speak, now in Awamiya, taking this young boy, to his last resting place and chanting down with the Al Saud. So it's not one person or two. We're talking about tens of thousands of people who have clearly stated that they want this regime down. And no matter what the Saudi regime says, it will not be successful.
Right. And right now, Mr. Wazni, I was reading this article in the media today. Political observers who are looking at the situation in Saudi Arabia saying that two issues are now important for the West when it comes to Saudi Arabia, and that is how these protests are going to be affecting the state stability in Saudi Arabia and also the amount of crude oil production there. So basically, if the West is looking at the Saudi protests in this perspective, how is it going to be, do you think, advising the Saudi regime when it comes to these protests?
I think there was some article was reported in the Wall Street just a couple days ago where I think the article stated very clearly they advise him to arrest Sheikh Nimr Nimr and crack down, because they feel, the American feel, that that disturbance or that start of movement in Saudi Arabia will have a lot of legs and will actually ignite a fire in Saudi Arabia. You have to remember, it's not only the eastern part, there are other part of the Saudi establishment, especially the women's, the liberal. They feel all they have cases against the monarchy. Even if we have to look at the monarchy among themselves, there is feud among themselves, especially when it comes to power. So any start of these demonstrations, I think will be resonate a lot of fear within the Saudi government and within the monarchy. I think the American and the Western world, they're very clearly, they're worried about their economic interests. They care about the oil and the flow of oil. We have to acknowledge the fact that Saudi Arabia sent over 10 million barrels a day from their country, and they provide the market, the U.S. market, with a lot of liquidity, and any shortage of that oil will be a havoc on the U.S. economy and in the financial crisis in Europe and throughout the world. So I think the American care about the oil and the flow of oil and the money that is deposited, and they have disregard for the people and the people of Saudi Arabia and those people who are demonstrating in the street. I think the fact the CIA director, he was in Saudi Arabia just 2 days ago meeting with the king, obviously this is actually will give some indication how important what is taking place in Saudi Arabia and how concerned the American is about what is taking place. They don't take any demonstration within ease, because they saw what happened in Egypt, what happened in Tunisia, what's happening in Yemen, and what's happening in Bahrain. These people who are marching in the street, they are determined, and they start with a few hundred and they end with big voices and to counter.
So you referred there to the CIA director meeting the Saudi Arabian king. That was a major development when we come to the relations between these two countries, especially at this time for Saudi Arabia. Stephen Lenman, what do you think this visit was about?
Oh, I'm certain they're talking about security. and what America will offer Saudi Arabia if they need it. I truly believe that if the Saudis can't handle this on their own, you'll see the Marines come in, the U.S. Marines come in to help the Saudis. Special forces, U.S. forces, probably special forces. America has many tens of thousands of them, and they'll come in and there'll be a proxy force aiding the Saudis. Saudi Arabia is very important to America for many reasons. The fact that it provides the energy that the world needs, a good deal of it, but a very important element are petrodollars. Petrodollars get recycled back. They buy U.S. weapons, they buy U.S. investments, they buy U.S. treasury bonds, they buy weapons for U.S.-led insurgencies in Yemen, in Syria, in Bahrain, and Saudi Arabia has deep pockets. It's got enormous wealth. It can support the U.S. imperial agenda in the region. The other Gulf Council states do the exact same thing. But again, Saudi Arabia is probably the linchpin for America in the region as far as U.S. imperial policies goes. If Saudi Arabia goes, the whole regional U.S. imperial agenda could unravel. Again, I really believe it's going to happen, but who can tell when? It's amazing in one respect what's happening in Saudi Arabia, and on another respect, it's not at all surprising. It was just a matter of time, and now the fuse is lit, and I really expect it to get much, much worse.
Right, and with this strong relationship that exists between these two countries, Mr. Ahmed, what do you think will be America's position, or what kind of intervention would it be trying to display in Saudi Arabia if things get bigger than they already are?
Well, typically the United States has did with other countries like the Hosni Mubarak regime. They supported the Hosni Mubarak regime to the last breath. They will do even more with Saudi Arabia. In fact, I mean, there are evidence that the United States has provided some assistance in terms of combating the protest movement that's ongoing. So I've seen photos that I'm showing to some experts of which appears to be satellite or drone pictures of the protest movement in Qatif, and the picture of Sheikh Namr al-Namr, which has surfaced on the internet, and it appears to be a picture leaked by the Saudi government somehow, but it's not from a protester, or because it's from the air, and it's not from the Saudi government because it was a scanned picture. So it looks like it's from the air, and it looks like very much like a picture from satellite or drone. And that picture was of the protest movement a few months ago, and I suspect that the United States has done that. We have statements, many statements by U.S. officials that they will support the Saudi ruling family to the end, and the visit of the head of the CIA and the National Security Council of the United States to Saudi Arabia in the past week shows you that they are reassuring the monarchy that they are supporting the Saudi monarchy to the last breath. To the United States policymakers, it's not about the people of Saudi Arabia, it's not about the country of Saudi Arabia, it's about supporting the ruling family, the Saudi monarchy, and that is very disturbing when it comes to the fact that this country, the United States, was founded on revolting against an absolute monarchy, the English monarchy at the time.
Right, we're quickly running out of time. I'd just like to bring you the last comments from all of you on the basic demands of the Saudi people and what change they are asking for. In Beirut, Mr. Wazni, when the protesters say that they want social justice, they want an end to systematic discrimination, how is that change going to be brought about? Does this mean a fundamental structural change in the entire monarchy system, or does this mean political reform?
I think it's not clear at this point, but I think the people wanted a fundamental change within the system in Saudi Arabia. They wanted probably a different system, political system. Maybe they think they had enough with the monarchy. Probably they wanted some elected power to represent the people of Saudi Arabia.
Right, and in Chicago, Stephen Lenman, if you could quickly, of course, tell us, I was reading some observers were saying that we shouldn't actually say the Saudis in Saudi Arabia, we should say the Arabs in the Arabian Peninsula. This is about the Al Saud family claiming a country and making the people in that country the Al Saud's slaves in his remarks. Do you think it is going to go as far as that, with people saying that we don't want Saudi Arabia to be known as a property of the Al Saud family?
Oh, absolutely. And again, I think the universal goal, the universal objective of people throughout the region, the Gulf states, Jordan, Israel, this young man who self-immolated for social justice. Social justice is the powerful rallying cry. It's the rallying cry in America. It's the rallying cry across Europe. Certainly is the rallying cry in Saudi Arabia, in Bahrain, in Yemen, in Egypt, in one country after another. These people don't want much. They want to be treated like human beings. They are human beings, and instead they're denied, they're oppressed, they're abused, and they're protesting for their rights. They do it nonviolently, and they're confronted violently. It's a shame, but the courage of these people is remarkable. I think they will persist, and hopefully in the end, they will win their goals, and I hope it happens in the West as well. It's so badly needed.
Mr. Ahmed, what do you think on this? Do you think when people are saying on the streets that we want justice, what does that mean? What kind of change are they looking for?
Well, the people in the region, in Saudi Arabia specifically, they would like to see a government by the people, for the people, and that is the demand of most of these people who are revolting across the Middle East. And the United States has not stood with these people. In fact, the U.S. and policymakers and even analysts figure that reform is anything that supports the continuity of the Saudi monarchy. Reform here means you need to remove the power from the hand of the few and give it to the people. Transfer power from the Al Saud to the people of that country. And that's what the people want.
So, Ms. Ahmed, are you saying that the people would be content with anything but the downfall of the monarchy? They would want anything but that?
They want the monarchy to fall because this is the biggest hurdle in front of their freedom, and it's the biggest hurdle for justice, and it's the Saudi regime is unsustainable. There is no system like this that could survive for a few years. So its collapse is imminent, and there is no question about it. And the West will be shocked, but it will happen.
Mr. Ali Al Ahmed, IGA Director, joining us there live from Washington. Thank you very much, Mr. Ahmed. I'd also like to thank our guest in Beirut, Mr. Kamal Wazni, political analyst, and in Chicago, writer and radio host Stephen Lendman. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for being with us. And thank you, viewers, for staying with another edition of News Analysis. From me, Homa Lesky, and the rest of the team, it's goodbye.